Was it March we talked last?
It was either the end of February or early March, yes. Yeah.
Well, I know that Blue Highway started out on kind of a sad note. Your marriage had broken up. You'd lost your job as a college professor in Columbia, Missouri, if I recall. You outfitted this van. You went around the country on the Blue Highways.
The back roads.
Back roads.
Mm-hmm.
Then you began to write about it, and all of a sudden, a good review popped out here and there, and strangely enough, from out of nowhere, you found yourself on the New York Times bestseller list. Now, did you anticipate the success of Blue Highways?
No, not at all. I sometimes had dreams of something like this, I guess, but realistically, I expected the book to be at best a cult book, and maybe in the first two or three years it might sell 10,000 copies. I would have been happy with that. I probably still would be happy with that if we could retract a few ideas here and there.
How many copies were in the first printing?
22,000.
How many printings did it go to?
It's in its 19th printing in hardback now, and sold about 225,000, a little more than that.
Oh.
And the paperback has just come out and came into the New York Times bestseller list at number one.
It started at number one?
It started at number one, which is difficult to go any higher, and that means that I can only go down from here. Psychologically, it's not the best place to be in, I suppose.
Blue Highways was certainly an unlikely book to become a bestseller, but it was so critically reviewed and such an interesting book. And I see, looking at catalogs from the rare book dealers, that believe it or not, Blue Highways is being sold by rare book dealers, the first printing of it. Did you know that?
I had no idea of that. I'm surprised.
Yeah,
I'm
people,
shocked.
People are beginning to collect it.
My heavens. Does that mean that I'm in the class with the dead authors? Have I left the living?
Well, people buy first editions by living authors, and you would be amazed at how difficult many of them are to get. For example, many books, John Barth, for example, wrote, his first book was called The Floating Opera. This book came out in an edition of 2000. It was remaindered. It came out in I think, 1959, something like that. It was remaindered because it didn't sell well. It landed on the drugstore counters, sold for about a quarter. Well, over the years, Barth developed a tremendous literary reputation. So naturally, scholars and people who are enthusiastic about Barth, very interested in reading his first work, which is available in paperback. But copies of his first book are almost non-existent because, fortunately, I had one. I was able to find it just by a fluke. But if you're prepared to spend several hundred dollars for a copy of the first book by a living author, you can do that. So maybe you're moving into that class.
That's to be with John Barth would be an honor, I guess. Yes.
Well, what's happened to you since that time? The things were pretty low for you, and when you set out on the trip, things obviously began to pick up after the trip. But I'm sure your life has been changed by the success of Blue Highways.
To a certain extent, I think in many ways, though, it goes on as it did. During the 4 years of writing Blue Highways, I worked on a loading dock from midnight to 6 in the morning, and my salary would be anywhere from $2,000 to $2,500 a year. And I got accustomed to living on that, and I find now, even though my income's a little greater, I still am living as if I have virtually no money. Well, that was no money. And I think people are disappointed in the answer. They want me to have the Rolls Royce or the yacht, and I have just no interest at all in those things. The one change in my life that I have noticed and that I'm concerned about, it's very difficult now to find blocks of time where I can write without interruptions. I'm starting to have to find various refuges to write in. I have an unlisted phone number, that sort of thing. And it's necessary now to hide. 4 years ago, 3 years ago, not at all necessary. And that concerns me a little bit, but I don't know what defense there is other than hiding.
Where are you living now?
I live in Columbia, Missouri still. And that in its own way is a certain amount of hiding. I can imagine what it would be like if I were here in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm. So the house you were living in before? Apartment or?
I was in an apartment at the time. I'm in a house now, but I had been in that house for, I guess, 3 years, 4 years.
And you were teaching, it wasn't Stevens, was it?
Yes, I taught at Stevens, and that's where I was teaching when, because of declining enrollment, I lost the job and took to the Blue Highways.
But you're not teaching now.
I teach one course at the University of Missouri, which is also in Columbia, one course in the writing of nonfiction. That's mainly to keep in touch with people whose ideas about writing are going to be different from mine because they're 20 years younger.
Uh-huh. You mentioned that you have a lot of interruptions you've had to hide. What are you working on?
The second book, as I see now, I hope now, will be a book about the prairie. Blue Highways, in a way, is a kind of horizontal sweep across America, a lot of places very quickly. The second book will not be Blue Highways 2, but rather a complement in that it will take one small rural area and go into it in much greater depth. It's a kind of a vertical quest into this area of the prairie in eastern Kansas. My goal, an impossible one, but nevertheless a goal to work toward, is to find every good and fascinating thing that has ever happened in this one county in Kansas. Hmm. In other words, we'll start with the geology and go to the straw hats the farmers wear.
Watch it, you're stepping on Michener's territory.
I think the organization will be different as well as the focus, but it's somewhat of a sweep in what he does, perhaps, say, in Centennial.
Well, that one I'm going to have to read, I'm from Wichita.
Well, you are. Well, I was in Wichita 3 days ago. The response there to Blue Highways has been immense and surprising, I must say. Any time for a Missourian to go into Kansas and be well received is a marvelous thing.
They don't shoot at you.
Not anymore. Not since 1865.
Have you set yourself a deadline? What's the new book going to be titled? Do you have a title yet?
No title. I have only notes at this point, ideas. Mm-hmm. Which makes it in some ways easy to talk about. It's easy to be glib about something you don't understand and don't know about.
Well,
but I would see it at least two years down the line.
Some authors don't like to talk about what they're working on. I think it's bad luck. Other people love to talk about it and indeed will read from their works in progress.
Yeah, sometimes it can help clarify what you're attempting to do. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in the luck notion, but I do think that you can talk a book into deadness. You can go dead to it yourself by having spoken what's going to be in it too much.
Well, Blue Highways is obviously, while it hasn't changed your lifestyle, it's obviously given you a lot of financial security to enable you to proceed with other projects.
That's the nice thing, yes. I don't think I have to get up at midnight and go to the loading dock when it's four below anymore, and that's very nice.
What happens, all of us dream, it's almost like winning the lottery, except this, of course, you had to work at. It's not like buying a chance for a dollar. So it certainly is a deserved reward. But what happens when somebody who was working on a loading dock suddenly comes in contact with a large amount of money? Or did this actually happen, or did it come in gradually in royalties or checks or what?
Writers are paid twice a year their royalties. So it does come in. The checks tend to be big, but there are only two of them a year. But when you stop and figure, or put it this way, you divide those royalties over the 5 years that the book was in writing and in production, the royalties suddenly become quite normal compared to a well-paid executive, perhaps, something of that sort. But it is a shock to go from $2,000 a year to something considerably greater than that. It's a wonderful shock. But I think that if a writer begins thinking about his income rather than if I can say it, his outgo, his word output, then he's got some problems.
Well, it was certainly deserved. Are you still, you're still calling yourself William Lee Steedman? Are you going to continue with that?
It's for the next book. The name will be appropriate because it will deal with the land and men and women on the land. But I could see perhaps down the line a book that would have nothing to do with the Plains Indian notions of time and of the land. What happens then? I don't know. I may be so locked into that name that it would be inescapable, even though it's inappropriate.
Well, I think in the future you're going to be selling that name. People are going to say, hey, look, I read this terrific book, and here's a new one, and by the same guy, I got to buy it.
I did a review for the New York Times, and I said, I think that I'm writing this piece under my Anglo name, William Trogdon. This is not least Heatman speaking too much, even though it was a review of two books about tribal America. That isn't the name they wanted. They wanted least Heatman, so, yeah, Yeah, Samuel Clemens certainly could have never escaped Mark Twain after a few years.
Well, assuming that CBS doesn't cancel the series, which now is heard in 9 cities, not in Columbia, Missouri, it's St. Louis, though. Supposed to be heard in St. Louis, starting last January 3rd. So we're going coast to coast with my little BookBeat broadcast, and assuming that CBS wants to continue the show, and I see no reason why they would not, Can I enlist from you a promise to come back and talk to me about your new book?
About the second book, when it's here, I'll be here. We'll make it three straight.
Thanks a million for coming.
Okay. Thanks, Don.